pleased to say. We did hold a public workshop on April 7th to discuss our proposed fee rule changes in support of the new board or the new budget. We didn't have any participation from the public, but we did mail out over 1,000 notices about the proposed fee rule changes, along with posting information on our website and other locations. So we'll be discussing this further this afternoon, but we will be bringing a draft budget or a final budget for consideration next month, and then we're required to have a follow-up hearing in June. And then this is related to the COVID-19 epidemic, but we've had one of our engineers, Meng Feng, has decided to leave our district to return home to China. And she's been an amazing addition to our engineering team. She has an incredible background in chemistry and a really strong, quiet spirit. So her presence will be greatly missed. Just in terms of what's going on in planning and air monitoring, we're still proceeding with the Monterey Bay Electric Vehicle Incentive Program. And so far we've processed about 324 applications. We've obligated about $280,000, and we've got about 100 so thousand remaining, 120. So we're on track to expend that $400,000 allotment by the end of the budget year. And we'll move on to a new electric vehicle incentive program, hopefully in the new year. And you'll be hearing from Alan Romero today about authorizing that to continue. Also, hot off the presses, we just received a press release from Bluebird, who builds electric buses. They've supplied on March 27th, a Leesla Union School District with their 100th electric bus they've built. So that's a pretty big deal for them and for us, and also for the school district. So be part of that effort. We're also continuing with our wood stove changeout program. It's changed this year. The state is managing the funds differently, and we're going to be working directly with the California Air Resources Board. And we've got a diminished amount of $175,000 in grant funds. So we're designing the program, and staff is working on that. We hope to bring a fully implementable program to you for consideration down the road. We're also working on an agreement with Monterey Bay Community Power for $1.2 million to match district funds to help school districts purchase electric buses through the Zero Emission School Bus Program. We've did a little bit of dickering with Community Power with respect to overhead costs, and we've agreed to keep the costs of the administration of this program to an absolute minimum. I think they're happy. So those of you that are on their board will probably be seeing our agreement come past you in the near future. Also, I just want to let you know that even though we've had really great air quality, we have had a number of complaints from the public with regard to wood smoke and prescribed burns or outdoor burning. We have not prohibited burning altogether, but we did release an advisory to follow our Spare the Air guidelines, which says basically if you don't need to burn in your fireplace or wood stove, please do not. And then if you do need to do so, burn responsibly, burn clean, dry firewood, and don't damper your vents down at night so that you allow complete combustion. So we realize that COVID-19 is a respiratory disease, and we certainly don't want to add to any of the discomfort that those afflicted may be experiencing. Also, we're going to be removing our San Lorenzo Valley seasonal monitors by the end of this month. So we do that over the summer months so that we get a handle on what's going on with wood stoves and fireplaces. In general, I could say that this year in particular, we've had really good weather, which has cleared out a lot of the pollution impacts from those types of heating devices. So we're not seeing, we haven't had to call a Spare the Air alert at all this winter, and our monitoring of the situation has shown that we're not seeing any exceedances. And then lastly, on outreach, of course, like all of you, I'm sure have experienced, we've had to cancel a number of events that we were going to participate in or lead. One of those being the Clean Air Leaders Awards. We hope to have that in May or June. That's been postponed, and I just want to thank Ann for doing so much work to get that together. We started earlier this year with the intent of making it a really great success like it has been in past years, but to build on that. And we had some negotiations to conduct with the venue, and finally we came to an accord. And then the district will be participating in a Drive Electric Earth Day virtual event on April 22nd. So Ann's going to be there. I'm sure Alan will be there too. And so we'll see how that goes for people to drive vehicles remotely. I don't think they're going to be doing that, but they'll be able to get an idea of what driving an electric vehicle is all about. So that concludes my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Any questions for the APCO? I've got one quick one, Rich. You know, obviously we have money earmarked for the EV incentive due to the pandemic. You know, what happens to funds that are left over that don't get spent in that allocation?
Well, it typically, although we're on an accrual basis and a cash basis, but it typically will roll over into the next year. So those monies are specific for reduction of motor vehicle emissions. So we can't use it for anything else. Those are designated funds. So we do that a lot. We get projects that can't see it through to fruition. So we disencumber those monies and add them to the pot essentially and allow for more grants in the subsequent years.
All right. And maybe just a note, this would have been appropriate for the budget personnel nominating committee, but I think it's important to note that obviously the pandemic is being taken into consideration as we look at the budget. I don't know if you want to comment at all on that, Rich. I mean, you'd mentioned during the committee meeting that some districts have, you know, taken the action not to increase fees, others have. Anything you want to share there? Because we will look at our budget next meeting.
Well, we've been trying to get a handle on what this is going to mean financially to the district as, and also the public and our sources, the regulated industry. At this point, we don't have any crystal ball that says we're going to have a catastrophic failure of the system, but we want to be sensitive to the fact that these are going to be very difficult economic times, probably for the next couple of years at least. And as a result, we had prepared a budget prior to the COVID outbreak. So it did include some proposed fee increases, but we fully expected those to be ramped back or zeroed out because of the epidemic. So as you mentioned, Steve, I talked about, I surveyed a number of air districts, about half the air districts in the state, and about half of those are continuing on fee increases. A lot of, like us, a lot of districts have their fees indexed to the CPI. So it usually goes to the board for approval and adoption. So of course, there's always the option of removing that provision. So we're prepared to make necessary reductions in spending based on the reductions in revenue that may result should we not increase our fees. And as all of you know, costs continuously go up as a result of, for instance, PERS. We're seeing increase there. So our costs, labor costs are going up. And we're in the currently in negotiations with the union about, we've had several proposals back and forth. So we'll be talking about that in closed session.
Okay.
As we move forward.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? Okay. Seeing none, we'll go on to the consent agenda. Is there any directors that would like to pull an item from the consent agenda? Okay. Any member of the public that's either on the call or maybe even via Ann, anything been pulled? Okay. Seeing none, we'll go ahead with a motion for the approval of the consent agenda in a second.
This is Supervisor Phillips. I move approval.
Thank you, Supervisor.
Second. Parker.
Seconded by Director Parker. Great. Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
I keep saying, call. We need a roll call vote. Roll so call. Go ahead, Ann, if you want with the roll call vote.
Okay, as I say your name, please say yes or no.
Director Botello?
Abstain on the minutes from the last meeting, but approve the rest of it. Yes.
Director Carbone?
Yes.
Director Coonerty?
Yes.
Director Friend?
Aye.
Director Ledesma?
Yes.
Director Lopez?
Yes.
Director McShane?
Yeah.
Director Parker?
Yes.
Director Phillips?
Yes.
Director Spencer?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Great. Okay. Moving on to the regular agenda, we'll go ahead and, Rich, if you'd like to address this resolution.
Okay, so as Les alluded to earlier, this is the urgency item. And I found out that through CAPCOA that there are provisions to allow us to potentially get funding from FEMA through the California Office of Emergency Services.
Are we talking the item 13 or the urgency item? I thought he was calling item 13, Richard.
Item 13 at this time, and then we'll go on to the urgency at the end of the regular agenda. So sorry, Rich. This is the resolution to apply a portion of the AB 2766 annual revenues towards funding and implementing the program, monitoring emissions reductions, so forth. So item 13.
Sorry about that. We're going to have Alan do a presentation on this, and this is what we do annually to carve out the monies necessary to implement our AB 2766 program, including the electric vehicle incentive program. So, Alan, I see you're on there with headphones and the beach behind you. You're on mute right now.
Yes, and so just a point of reference, that's taken from San Carlos Beach here in the city of Monterey. That's Fremont Peak in the background. That was about 2 weeks ago. It's fantastic. We're very fortunate to live here, especially in these times with the virus. And with that, I'll get started. Good afternoon, Chair McShane and the rest of the directors. I'm here to present to you the FY21 Motor Vehicle Emission Reduction Program. Let's see if I can get this going here. Can everybody see the screen? Oops.
We see each other.
Yeah.
Okay.
You need to share, Alan.
That's right. Sorry. Forgot to do that. Let me back it up. Okay. Here's share. Share. This.
Should be at the bottom.
Yep. Got it. Just got to pick the right screen.
There we go.
All right. So we're good there. Let's start all over from the beginning. So we're coming to the board with the FY21 AB 2766 Motor Vehicle Emission Reduction Program brought to you virtually today. Yes, this is unprecedented, so we'll see how this goes. Just as a little bit of background for everyone on the board, we do this and we've done this for the past 30 years based upon Assembly Bill 2766, which was authored by then Assemblyman Byron Scherer. According to the Safety Code Section 44220, we are allowed to collect a local DMV fee and use that primarily to solicit and fund cost-effective motor vehicle direct emission reduction projects. This year, fiscal 21, we have done what we've done similarly in the past. We have two major programs under the 2766 umbrella. One we have labeled the Clean Air Management Program, which includes the three key elements of that program: roundabout design and construction, adaptive traffic signal control, and what we're renaming and rebranding this year, advanced clean transportation. The other major component of our 2766 program is the Clean Vehicle Program. The two components there are an EV voucher replacement incentive for public agency fleets, and then of course the electric vehicle incentive program for residents in the three counties. So I'm going to walk through all of the elements of both of these programs for you today. Let's start first with the Clean Air Management Program. We have done a total of 6 roundabouts in the 3 counties since 2012. And the latest one that your board awarded to the city of Soledad in fiscal year 19 was the East Street Metz Road Roundabout Project. This is just a typical example of what a roundabout entails. These are very complex construction projects. I want the board to understand that. You don't just run a dozer out there. There's an awful lot of multi-jurisdictional agencies that weigh in on building a roundabout. That includes stormwater pollution protection from the water board. You've got egress, ingress from typical owners of property called Caltrans District 5, and all of the other easement issues that come with changing geometrically and physically the landscape in any given municipality. Roundabouts are not cheap. This particular roundabout as proposed has a price tag of over $1 million. If you look at the wonderful roundabout that is in existence today at the Holman Highway and Highway 1, that was an $8 million project. And it works really quite well. I drive it every day. Roundabouts are awesome projects because they have a really long project life. In other words, once you've built it, you're not going to do much to change it. And based upon your original modeling, you should continue to receive the emission reduction benefit for many, many, well, we'll give it a timeline and say 15 to 20 years. Very typical for a roundabout project life. So the next component of the Clean Air Management Program is adaptive signal control. This is an alternative to congestion management on existing corridors with existing controlled traffic signals. One of the earlier ones that we had done was to the city of Watsonville in fiscal year 17. Your board awarded the city of Watsonville 2 grant projects. One, the very first one, was on Freedom Boulevard to the Main Street intersection. That's this orange line that you see at the top. And the most recent one for the city was fiscal year 17's Green Valley Road adaptive traffic control signal project. One thing that I'd like to point out about several things. These projects tend to be considerably cheaper than roundabouts, and that's simply because you're not changing the geography of the terrain. You're simply enhancing the controllers that control each of these signalized lights at an intersection with detection methodology and also software upgrading within the controller computer. The one thing I want to point out about adaptive control projects on existing corridors is we give them a project life of about 5 years. And the reason for that is the one key variable that goes into the calculation, one of the key variables, but a strong one, is average daily traffic. So when we calc these projects out as they come across our table during the application process, we take the activity data given by our applicants and we calculate what the expected emission reduction will be based upon the key variables, one of them being ADT. Back in fiscal year 16, actually it was March of 2016, when the city of Watsonville first submitted their application for this project, the calculation came out to about 1.2 tons per year of emission reduction based on ADT of 20,000 vehicles per day. 4 years later, after the project there was some significant delays in this project. Another thing I want to point out to the board is both roundabouts and adaptive control projects are not simply projects that happen overnight. They take considerable length of time and oftentimes there are delays beyond the control of the municipality doing the project. A lot of times that involves construction projects that were already in place, easement agreements with Caltrans District 5. So just not to be taken lightly, these projects take a while and they're very expensive as well. This one being, backing up a little bit, adaptive control is about typically 25 to 50% less than the cost of a roundabout. An average cost per signalized intersection is about $50,000 to $60,000. So you can see on this particular project, there are 9 total intersections on the Green Valley Road corridor. Project was the estimated cost of the project after the cameras were mounted and the detection capabilities were mounted with about a little over $400,000. So looking at the activity data taken after the project was done, which was March of this year, the traffic counts went up to 22,834. Correspondingly, there's going to be a reduction or an emission reduction decrease. And you can see that from 1.2 tons per year calculated to 1 ton per year as calculated in March of 2020. And it's whether it's coincidental or not, the reduction in emission reduction benefit and the increase in ADT, they're both about 13%, which is another reason why we want to keep the project life to these types of projects to about 5 years. Tweaking can be done on the system. Additional upgrades to the system are available. But when we calc these projects, we calc them at 5 years. So that's the City of Watsonville's project, which is done and happily running along. It's funny to note that in this unprecedented time, and as Rich pointed out earlier, ADT on any corridor these days is going to be considerably less than it is normally. So last year, your board awarded the County of Santa Cruz a project, a similar adaptive control project on Soquel Drive. The highlighted intersections with black dots represent where those upgrades will take place. This is another project that has a unique flavor to it. They are going to partner with the City of Capitola for a project that was awarded that same year along the 41st Avenue corridor. You can see that Soquel Drive as a major collector to the arterial 41st, which feeds the freeway. They obviously connect at that center point. And so with a total of 13 signalized controlled intersections under adaptive control, there should be a tremendous amount of emission reduction benefit. And those of you who know the 41st Avenue corridor will attest that it's pretty much a nightmare during peak traffic hours. So these systems should, and because it's the same hardware on both of the corridors, all of these signalized intersections will talk to each other, which is tremendous, so that there's no hiccups in traversing the entire area for the two corridors, and the emission reduction benefit will be as significant. So we're looking forward to the completion of those two projects. There's a lot of challenges involved since Caltrans owns three of the intersections. So we'll see how that all plays out. Last year, your board also awarded the City of Monterey its fourth and fifth corridor project. This is, we call it Adaptive Control Phase 3 for the City of Monterey. The first corridor that was awarded by your board was along Lighthouse Avenue. Once that system was done, they next moved on to Del Monte and the Fremont Avenue corridors, all three of which are complete. The two packages for fiscal year 20 that your board awarded were to take care of the traffic on Foam, which is parallel to Lighthouse. And if you've ever been down in that area in Cannery Road during business hours, the crossroads that intersect with Lighthouse will always stack up. And one of the main reasons being is that Lighthouse is under control, but Foam is not. So once Foam gets adaptive, both corridors will talk to each other, which will significantly reduce the cross traffic congestion. That should be a powerful project when it's done. The other half of that was Munros Avenue and Fremont, the Fremont corridor, where Fremont actually terminates at Abrego and Munros. That Munros Avenue is a huge arterial. It feeds Highway 1. Fremont Street is the same level of traffic as an arterial. And so these two corridors, Cannery Row and this one, will add up to five controlled corridors that the City of Monterey will now operate. And so one thing I want the board to understand about the emission reduction per corridor, it's cumulative. Even if it's the same car traversing all five corridors, the emission reduction is cumulative each time they are on an adaptively controlled corridor. So we're looking at 7-ton annual emission reduction benefit from the five projects. So we're pretty excited about that. Let's move on to the clean air management, the clean vehicle replacement program. One of the components is for public agencies. This your board awarded in fiscal year 19 to the City of Santa Cruz to replace their summer beach trolley, which previously were CNG trolleys that they had resurrected and put on the road to get some sort of emission reduction benefit. But seriously, there's no better emission reduction benefit than zero. So the city of Santa Cruz, very forward thinking. Amanda Rotella standing there with her crew from First Transit Incorporated is their third party operator of these trolleys. They will buy two of them. This is the first one that was delivered in December, and the second one will come in April. And these are built by Phoenix Motors out of Lancaster, California. They get about 110, 120 miles per range, which is more than adequate for running the shuttle from downtown Santa Cruz to the Fisherman's Wharf. Another project, first of all, let me give you an inside look at the interior. These are really nice looking trolleys. 14 passenger, note that there's a wheelchair lift on both of these. They were built in Ontario. And as I said, the second one will come in April. So I know that economic development is really excited about this project, and we look forward to some sort of ribbon cutting when they get everything in and graphically painted up. And that will happen hopefully sometime this year. Also, your board awarded in fiscal year 20 to MST their fourth electric bus. This one will be a full-size 71-passenger Gillig. The previous buses were built by BYD. This is an American company, and they're traditionally building and have built diesel buses, which MST currently has several. The Salinas Flyers are all built by Gillig, but this one will be all electric. We're really excited about this, and this will become, I think the delivery is slated for 2021. And then another project which we're really excited about, which kind of kicks off advanced clean transportation for fleets, is what your board awarded to the city of Salinas. The fleet director, Ron Peterson, there took a big quantum leap of faith and said, yeah, we can do this. So he's going to take three of his old trucks, destroy them, and replace them with these, what they're called E200s, are basically Ford 450 chassis that have an electric drivetrain that is built by Phoenix Motors out of Southern California. So these vehicles are going to get two panel trucks that you see, and then one flatbed depicted at the bottom. Their range is awesome. It's 110. They both are capable of level 2 and DC fast charge capability. I know Ron is excited about getting this going, and we're looking at delivery in 2021. So what we intended to do with advanced clean transportation is offer fleet replacement to all public fleets, but they must be electric. And so that is what we would like to convince these agencies that it's the right thing to do, and it is. Regardless of how many miles driven, for as long as these vehicles are on the road, which would give about a 15-year project life, it's zero emission from day one. So lastly, the last component of the clean vehicle program is, of course, the electric vehicle incentive program for the public. We started this, and your board allowed us to operate this program starting in fiscal year 17. We are now in fiscal year 20, which is 4 years of running the program. You can see from the metric that we've gone up every single year. And at the same breath, we've also taken the total incentive amount available down every year. So in 17, we started at 2,500 for all electric vehicle. We notched that down to 2,000 in fiscal year 18, took it further down to 1,500 in fiscal year 19. And this year we offer the same incentive for $1,000 for an all electric vehicle, including used vehicles. We've done that for the past 2 years, and we've done very, very well with that. The first year we did 15 used vehicles, which Director Machine took advantage of. And we also were at this point, at this stage of the game, with 32% funding left, we've done 34 used vehicles, which is really good news. We're really excited about that. The solid line is where we're at, a couple plus or minus two since last Friday. The number up in red, if we spend all of the money by the end of fiscal year 20, we will have added 472 more electric vehicles to the fleet for a grand total of 1,206. So we're very, very excited about where this is all going. We're happy that people are embracing driving electric vehicles. It just, there isn't any replacement for cleaner air than that. Nothing coming out. There is no tailpipe. And with that, I'm going to just wrap it up and ask if there's any questions to the board.
There is no tailpipe.
No.
anybody have questions as a follow-up for Mr. Romero?
Jane Parker raised her hand.
Okay. There we go. There we go, Jane.
Thank you. Alan, I had a question in the first category where you talked about roundabouts and the signal adaptation. There was a third category of advanced transportation something. Could you, what were the things that fell into that category? Because I felt like we moved then to larger electric vehicles for public agencies, and I just didn't hear where that advanced transportation thing came in.
Thank you for that question, Director Parker. What I wanted to bring together, but probably didn't do a very good job of that, is advanced clean transportation is fleet replacement. And so this was the first domino to fall, which was the brainstorming of us to come to the board and say, we want to call this advanced clean transportation. So any public agency with a fleet replacement project that they want to do, say in particular, the city of Santa Cruz wants to do a all electric refuse truck for this coming cycle, we would encourage them to do that. So any public agency with a fleet replacement project, as long as it goes electric, that will become an eligible project under advanced clean transportation. I hope that answered the question.
So the shuttle in Santa Cruz, the trucks in Salinas are all part of that?
Correct. This was kind of like the birthing of advanced clean transportation, because back in fiscal year 19, we just called it fleet replacement. And so since the city of Santa Cruz Economic Development took this as a pioneer, we said, why don't we make them all electric? Because up until that time, we had also supplied to the Salinas Solid Waste Valley Authority, Waste Authority, two replacement trucks, which were CNG, in that same fiscal year, which your board awarded. Mm-hmm. So after we thought about it a minute and said, wait, let's really go for it and get some zero emission and some serious, real annual emission reduction benefit, go electric. And as the marketplace has advanced, more and more of these medium to heavy duty vehicles are coming to the marketplace and are commercially available now. And I think the forward thinking agencies that see that are willing to embrace that and put it in their fleet electrification plans.
Thank you.
Great. Any other questions? I'm looking for hands up. Okay, seeing none, we'll go ahead and take it to the public for any questions that members of the public might have if you're on the call, or Anne, if you have some indication that a comment's been brought in or posted.
Nope, I do not.
Okay, seeing none, this is a action item, and we're looking for someone that can make a motion to adopt the resolution under item 13.
Lopez moves approval.
Okay. Carbone second for approval.
Moved by Lopez, seconded by Carbone. We'll go ahead with a roll call vote. Ann?
Okay. Please answer yes or no. Director Botello?
Yes.
Director Carbone?
Yes.
Director Coonerty?
Yes.
Director Friend?
Aye.
Director Ledesma?
Aye.
Director Lopez?
Aye.
Director McShane?
Yes.
Director Parker?
Yes.
Director Phillips?
Yes.
Director Spencer?
Yes.
It carries, motion carries unanimously.
Great. Okay. So for the next item, there's an oral update report on winery regulation. Rich, would you like to go ahead and provide that?
Yes. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair, board members. So this is a follow-up to our winery presentation that we did a number of meetings ago. And we've got two items for further discussion with the board today. One of them is CEQA, and the other one is one of the findings we have to make regarding environmental justice. And then, you know, we've been saying this at every presentation, but I just want the board to know that even if we change our Rule 207, and backslide and make it less stringent, it would only change the offset threshold. It does nothing to the state requirement that best available control technology be used for any facility that emits more than 25 pounds per day. That's pounds per day, not tons per year. So we know that Santa Barbara is employing this now and is successful. It's in the back clearinghouse for the state. So we're anticipating that most wineries would still be subject to the BACT control. We also understand in conversations with the wineries that they are looking at purchasing emission credits for offsets. And these are, they're trying to buy NOx emission credits. And as you know, or may know, NOx is a precursor to ozone, as VOC is. And our rule does allow for the trading. In fact, it may be better for us to receive NOx emission offsets as opposed to VOCs. We haven't done any photochemical modeling and we don't propose to do that, but that's something that there are more NOx offset credits available. There's some over 1,000 tons available. And we know that one of the wineries is looking to purchase a significant portion of that. So they're negotiating with those private companies that have since ceased emissions of NOx. So getting to the first item, which is CEQA, we've been talking to the state and we've considered what type of document may be necessary if we revise Rule 207. And through our research, the potential emissions increase in VOCs may be over 40 tons per year and around 219 pounds per day. Our VOC emission threshold for CEQA is 137 pounds per day. So the Rule 207 change for wineries would exceed our CEQA threshold. Therefore, we anticipate in a conversation with the state, they've said that we would most likely be required to do an environmental impact report. And this also would apply to not just wineries, but also to other sources that emit VOCs, since we can't single out a particular industry. So the first step to this would be completing an initial study, and we probably have to rely on a consultant to assist us with that. In my period here, we have not done an EIR. They're pretty exhaustive and require a lot of resources. The other thing that I wanted to throw out there is that we believe the cost to prepare an EIR is going to be considerable. And once again, typically those are at least in part borne by the industry making that request. So I'm not sure, we have not talked to the wineries about this, but I wanted to get your feedback on if we should attempt to seek some sort of cost sharing with the wineries to prepare an initial study and possible EIR. So I'll just leave that on the table and I'll just let you know about the second issue. And it's related to the four findings. The fourth finding that we have to make so that we can backslide is that that it has to be consistent with the state board regarding environmental justice. As you know from previous presentations we made to you about virtually a lot of items, the Salinas Valley, where the wineries are located, has been designated a low-income area as per AB 1550, so a disadvantaged community. And then per our initial conversation with CARB about that finding, they said that may be really challenging for us to make the determination that that doesn't adversely impact the population down there. And I know there's discussion jobs versus air quality and that sort of thing, but that's not going to fly with the Air Resources Board. And we would have to workshop with the local environmental groups down in that area to let them know what is being proposed. So we would certainly appreciate any help that we could have from Director Lopez in that area, because that's one of the requirements too, that we have to demonstrate to the state that we have involved the communities and done a significant amount of outreach about the impacts of the potential backsliding. So those are the two issues. We are still talking to the state. They've advised us at this time that the best process to go forward is to remove or rescind our request to adopt changes to Rule 207. Remember, we did that 3 years ago, and they have since not acted on it. So we would withdraw that rule change, and then we would get into the rulemaking progress to develop a new rule with the new standards that are less stringent. That just to remind the board, the two main things the wine industry has requested, that we remove our daily emission limit, which currently is 137 pounds per day, and then also increase the annual emission limit from 10 tons to 25 tons. So that's where we're at right now. We see this as a significant impediment as far as cost, especially as we talked about fees and so forth to the district. So we don't have a good idea of what an EIR could cost, but I've been told anywhere from $200,000 to $500,000. So that I'll turn it over to you, and I'll request any direction you can provide.
Well, sure. I'm sure there'll be some feedback, and we'll go to Director Lopez. I think first we do, or we had a call it what I'm calling a working group. We could assign this to an ad hoc. I mean, I'll look to less. We don't want to burn too much time on digging down into the detail, but there was a few directors that had met sideline to discuss this, and we could do some more of that. But Director Lopez, you want to?
That was my recommendation, that we take this back to the ad hoc. I think we had a group where we had these conversations, and to just keep bringing this back to the board, a surprise, here it is, and there's all these new challenges. You know, I'd rather we send this to an ad hoc to start addressing some of these issues and get this moving forward. You know, we've known about these issues, and I don't want to let off the gas. I think we should proceed, but I understand there's some challenges here, and rather than dealing with unknowns, let's assign it to an ad hoc and get some knowns and bring it back to this board for that decision. I know it was a vote that we took last time, but you know, again, this is the first time I'm hearing of these challenges, and I'd rather work with the group to help make this come to a good conclusion for us.
That sounds good. Les, is there any protocol we need to follow, or is it just at the discretion to put together that ad hoc visit and have another report next meeting?
Okay, so there are a couple of ways that this could be done. If you do not want your ad hoc committee to be a Brown Act committee, then it must be composed solely of directors and must be less than a quorum. So it has to be five directors or fewer, and only directors. And if the board establishes that ad hoc committee, and it's only advisory, and it's not decision-making, then that committee is not subject to the Brown Act. If you want to establish a membership of individuals other than directors, then it becomes subject to the Brown Act.
No, excellent. Okay, so we'll go back to that group, just directors, advisory in nature, and we'll come back next meeting. I can work with Rich to get that scheduled. But in the meantime, any is there any questions, any feedback? I mean, this is not an action item. I appreciate the priority on it, Rich, and I think it's important to seek resolution.
Right, I just want to address comments by Director Lopez. We're not sitting on our hands here. We've been working with the state. So we have talked about the issue of EIR in the past, as well as the environmental justice community aspect. So these are something that I'm reiterating the feedback we've received from the state. They have not been moving swiftly in this regard. They just recently assigned an attorney to this. And of course, now with the COVID-19 underway, they're really severely shortage of staff that are available to work on this. This is not a huge priority to them, even though we've told them that it is. And so to the extent that you would like to do that, we could send a letter from the chair. I'd be happy to draft a letter expressing that this is a high priority for the district to get completed.
Well, let's get it together.
Supervisor Phillips here. I would I would appreciate doing that. This was kind of the report I expected, but and I'd be interested to be on that committee.
Okay. Well, we have a couple there, and we'll find another one or two from, say, Santa Cruz or San Benito County, and we'll get a meeting together. Unless there's any immediate feedback, I'm looking for hands up. Looks like, there we go. Director Botello.
Thank you, Chairman McShane. Anyhow, I understand the cost of this statement, pointing out the cost of doing an EIR and working with the state, but just as importantly, and is controlling costs to the industry as well, you know, oftentimes that additional regulation adds a greater burden. Industry is probably, it's going to be very hard hit if we go into a recession with this COVID-19 crisis for the next few years. It was already headed into a downturn to begin with. In San Mateo County, we're trying to embrace the wine industry and encourage it. So, you know, we're very concerned about additional regulations and burdens on that industry.
Okay, Director Parker, and then we'll go back to, unless Les had something to clarify.
I do, but I'll wait till after Supervisor Parker.
Okay.
Thank you. And it looks like Anne has something she might want to say. Yeah. My question just is, we're setting up a committee that is not subject to the Brown Act. Are you planning to, with that group, let the general public know that it's meeting in case members of the industry or other members of the public want to be able to attend and listen in or whatever?
Sure.
I don't think it's required if it's not a yeah. Brown Act committee, but just wondering how you're planning to handle it.
Yeah, staff has been in close contact with the industry. They've met, you know, even on their own, and I anticipate there'll be more of that. Certainly that'll be my direction to staff. And we'll get together the ad hoc, and that may be necessary. Certainly if there's going to be, you know, forums or hearings required as part of the ARB's piece in this. So I think at this point in time, we'll get some directors together following an opportunity for staff to engage stakeholders, and we'll plot a course. There may not be juice in this fruit. It sounds a bit discouraging, quite frankly, but you know, let's continue. You know, this has been a priority. We voted on it in that capacity and see where it goes. Andy, you have something? And then we'll come, or Les?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I recommend that even though this is listed as an oral update, I believe that the board does have the ability to create the ad hoc. This does have to be created by the board. So it might be appropriate to entertain a motion to create an ad hoc winery regulation committee consisting of not more than five directors to be selected by the chair or named individually today. And also to authorize you to send a letter to the state board indicating the priority of this issue to the Monterey Bay Air Resources District.
Okay, is there a motion to create the ad hoc?
Lopez, I move.
Second, Botello.
Okay, moved and seconded. Any discussion? Any discussion at this time?
This is Zach. I have a quick discussion. What would the length? We don't need to establish the length of the ad hoc, but what's your intention just to come back by the next meeting, you had said, with some updated information? So I have a sense of when this will actually end.
Yep, that's right. And I'm hoping it's a meeting. Quite frankly, I don't think we need to be meeting multiple times. So once the meeting today adjourns, I'll get with Rich. We'll get as much information as we can together. We have the meeting. We report back next meeting. Okay.
If I could, Mr. Chair, I was having some concerns about this, but I guess if it's going to be just essentially a committee that meets between now and the next meeting, and that's the extent of it, then I can support the formation. I don't really agree with the tack that this board is taking, so I would want to have my disagreement with sending the letter to the state be registered. But I'm not going to object to the ad hoc committee since it's essentially a one-time meeting situation. I'm not sure how to do that procedurally.
You could separate the motion. There could be a motion to create the ad hoc and then a second motion regarding the letter.
Okay, so is the maker of the motion and the second amenable to separating it so that the motion before us is just the formation of the ad hoc?
I think the maker of the motion has agreed to that first before the second.
Yeah, well, is the maker, Chris? Okay, well, he'll be back momentarily.
Or, I mean, so the silence indicates perhaps that there's not a willingness. So we can keep it as one motion, but then I would vote against it, and you know my reasons, so.
All right, fair enough. That'll be reflected. Okay, members of the public on this item, if anybody's attending, or if Ann received anything via email. Okay, all right, so the motion is to form an ad hoc and send a letter expressing urgency on this topic. Okay, we'll go with the roll call vote, Ann.
All righty, Director Botello?
Yes.
Director Carbone?
Yes.
Director Coonerty?
Yes.
Director Friend?
Aye.
Director Ledesma?
Yes.
Director Lopez?
Yes.
Director McShane?
Yeah.
Director Parker?
No.
Okay, I'll work with...
I just wanted to make a note of that. I've got two more names. Director Phillips?
Oh, sorry.
Yes.
And Director Spencer?
Yes.
By April, everybody's going to be, I think you guys are what, on Thursdays?
Okay, so I'll work with Rich on preparing a report. We'll get the committee together. We have at least two people that stepped up. If there's anybody else that's interested, please signal me, Rich, or Ann, and we'll have a report next meeting. So moving on to the next item, it is the item that we added as a urgency item, and we'll go to Rich for a report on that. And Ann, if you want to share the screen, perhaps, or whatever you think's appropriate.
Ann, do you have the resolution also? I can share that if you don't.
This right here?
Yes, that. Okay, very good. Great.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. So as I started to talk about this for item 13, I apologize, but this is the resolution I was referring to. And I found out about this through the California Air Pollution Control Officers Association. A number of air districts are going to be applying through FEMA and the Office of Emergency Services for potential emergency protective measures. And that's a request for public assistance through FEMA. So there may be monies available to agencies. We have been designated as essential activity. So to keep the place in line, we need to actually go through the state of California, their Office of Emergency Services, as part of a tandem application. And we have to have a designation of applicants agency and agent resolution for non-state agencies. So that's what you see before you. And this just authorizes me to operate on your behalf to apply for funds. And my anticipation is that we have a deadline right now of the end of the week to get an application in. It's basically a placeholder. I'm not sure if there's going to be any public monies available to agencies such as our air district, but I would really think it would be remiss if I didn't apply for that and at least have the potential to recoup some cost back to our district as a result of this pandemic.
So, Mr. Chair, if I could just clarify that the potential action item consists of two items. One is the adoption of the resolution that's in front of you, but there was another action item that authorizes the APCO to make any necessary applications and pursue any federal funds. So if Ann would scroll back up to the title, those are the two items that we would like a vote on. Thank you.
Got it. Would that be two separate votes?
No, that can be one. They're related, unless somebody wants to separate, but that could be a single vote.
Okay. Any questions by directors? Let me look here. Okay. Don't see any hands up. All right. We'll go to public. Any member of the public that has a question or a statement on this? Ann, did you receive anything?
No, not through email.
Okay. So we'll bring it back, and we need a motion on both the resolution and the authorization.
Motion for approval by Carbone.
Lopez, moved by, second.
Moved by Carbone, seconded by Lopez. Okay. Ann, we'll go about a roll call vote.
All righty. Director Botello?
Yes.
Director Carbone?
Yes.
Director Coonerty?
Yes.
Director Friend?
Aye.
Director Ledesma?
Yes.
Director Lopez?
Yes.
Director McShane?
Yeah.
Director Parker?
Yes.
Director Phillips?
Yes.
Director Spencer?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you very much. Thanks for bringing that to our attention and for being proactive and going after that. Mr. Stedman, that's the end of our regular agenda. We have closed session, and everyone should have received an invitation under separate copy to attend that.
Thank you, Chair. If I could just note for the record that I do not anticipate a report out from closed session. We can adjourn the meeting from closed session. Minutes can reflect that there was no reportable action.
Okay, appreciate that announcement. With that, this Zoom meeting of the Monterey Bay Air Resources Board comes to a close. I want to thank everybody for attending, and we'll reconvene in closed session. If you have any questions or don't know how to get on to closed session, give Ann a call. And we'll reconvene in just a few moments. Thanks.
And doesn't have the information. So get a hold of me if you don't have the invite. I send an invite to everybody with a separate sign-in. And it has a password associated with it. If you have trouble, send me an email or give me a call.
Perfect. All right. Thank you, Les. Appreciate that. We'll go ahead and adjourn. Thank you.
Thanks.